This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Friday afternoon, Mark Kermode, good afternoon to you.
How are you?
I'm doing all right, actually.
You notice that I'm seeming slightly under-caffeinated.
Yes, because the Crucial Coffee kiosk seems to be shut.
But it wasn't there.
Keith says, Simon and Mark, love the new Identify a Movie by its Warning game.
Yes.
See if you can try this. Contains scenes of prolonged and ill-advised tap dancing, incessant quirkiness and floppy hair.
Hang on. Ill-advised,
Tap dancing, yes. incessant quirkiness and floppy hair. Tap dancing usually ill-advised in a movie.
No, that's not true at all. Sometimes that's absolutely fabulous. Fred Astaire's a marvellous thing, and all the Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movies were a very big part of my childhood, watching them on Sunday afternoons with my family.
As if I care.
Ill-advised tap dancing. I don't think there is such thing as ill-advised tap dancing. In fact, funnily enough, you know, I play in a skiffle band. I have been trying to get our banjo player, who does tap dance, to do a tap dancing solo in the middle of a song because no other band is currently doing it. I don't know. What is that?
Elizabeth Town, in the opinion of Keith, says, I'm sure Mark has bought the DVD. Apparently,
I hated Elizabeth Town. I must... Oh, I know. Of course. He's referring to the scene in which Susan Sarandon tap dances at the memorial for her recently deceased husband, who had clearly read the script and decided to get out while the going was good. Yes, very good. And I'm sorry that I wasn't up to form there.
Dave in Reading, on the running subject of film warnings, here's an obvious one, and in the style of a TV announcer.
I'm not going to get this now because it's obvious.
Viewers of a sensitive nature are warned that the following film contains an excessively animated Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder looking badly drawn.
Oh, it's, Still Life. Or, no, there's a new one, isn't it? Because it's, which is called...
Three words.
Through a scanner darkly.
A scanner darkly. That's David.
This is what happens, you know, just remove the caffeine and everything goes a lot slower.
We are looking. I have paid money.
Have you?
To appropriate sources.
And money hasn't
had,
changed
haven't
hands.
Had anything in return.
Okay.
The other thing running, movie taglines, Marie Mayer in St. Paul, Minneapolis, I think that is, in the States. Simon and Mark, are we still doing alternative movie taglines? Well, if you keep sending them in, I think it still runs. The 1992 Kevin Costner film, The Bodyguard.
Oh, yes.
The alternative tagline. I'm sure, I don't know how many of these are original, but they're original to me.
Yes, go on.
So it counts. Whitney Houston, we have a problem.
Very good. I haven't heard that before. I think that is original.
That's very good, isn't it? Which I hope will prompt the good doctor to recall the real tagline of Sam Neill's movie, The Dish.
Which was, Sydney, we've got a problem, wasn't it?
Houston, we have another problem.
Another problem. Right.
Marie in St. Paul, thank you. Dave in Leeds, here's another movie tagline for The Estimable Doctor. This is very good, I like this. I know what you did last, Sumner, which is anything with Sting in it.
Yes, and he is rubbish in almost everything. Funnily enough, I was just doing a thing about stars doing cameos in movies, and Sting is one of those people who, almost everything he's in, he's rubbish, except
for
Quadrophenia, he's quite good. Because he doesn't do anything in Quadrophenia apart from turn up, get off the bike, do a bit of fake dancing at the Royalty Ballroom, which is actually in Southgate, that's meant to be in Brighton, and then he has one line. Do you remember when the judge fines him £5 or something? He says, will you take a cheque? And that's it. And that's the way to do Sting in a movie. One line and a little bit of bad dancing.
He has the same attitude to duets albums on which he turns up on all of them, even Pat O'Banton.
You haven't been listening to his lute music, have you?
Missed it.
Yeah.
We have a lot of correspondence, a lot concerning Borat already, which we'll get to. Various sightings of the good doctor. More taglines, more warnings, 85058, mayo@bbc.co.uk. But as we have the time now, let's do the box office top 10 this week. Reviews coming up later, by the way, also for Little Children and Scenes of a Sexual Nature and 66 films which have been talked about on this programme anyway. But the top 10 this week. Hoodwinked at 10.
Out it goes, finally. That's enough postmodern cartoon, you know, animated retelling of fairy tales for grown-ups, Ed.
A Good Year at 9.
But clearly not. I mean, at number 9, clearly not A Good Year. And it's very interesting that almost everybody across the board just saw A Good Year for what it was, which was incredibly ill-advised. There are a couple of laudatory quotes on the poster, but it... I mean, I have yet to find somebody who saw that film and thought, you know what, it's really good. And even as a fan of Ridley Scott and as somebody who appreciates that Russell Crowe does have acting, I mean, I thought it was very, very tepid and dull.
And this from Liam, just listening to last week's podcast, on a good year. Agree with most of your comments on Mr. Crow. However, you really should check out The Sum of Us, an early comedy he did with Jack Nicholson where he plays a gay rugby club player, which is hilarious stuff.
Yeah, I have seen The Sum of Us. I don't think as highly of it as some people do, but I have seen. I mean, I think he can do a lot of things, but I have yet to see evidence that comedy is his forte.
Number eight, The History Boys.
Great play, great cast, great script, great director. Shame about the film falling completely flat on the screen.
Click at number seven.
Yet again, Adam Sandler tests our patience with a quirky comedy about having a remote control to control his life. All the gags you've seen before, but it does have Christopher Walken with mad hair doing an impression of the Mad Professor from Back to the Future.
Barnyard is at number six.
It's the anatomically incorrect animals to confuse your children and send them to school with a head full of wrong ideas about what, you know, male cows are. Male cows are bulls. None of this would matter if the film was actually any good, if any of the gags were any good, but they aren't.
The Devil Wears Prada's at number five.
A perfectly fine, teenage romantic, you know, movie which just happens to have a whole bunch of stuff in it about the fashion world, which has been wrongly criticised for not being a savage attack on the... It was never really meant to be that. It's an Anne Hathaway movie. I say that, as you can hear, almost stumbling over my words, because I'm slightly traumatised by the fact that Anne Hathaway has recently made this movie in which she plays a teenage tearaway who goes down and hangs out and takes drugs and has lots of sex with the... And you just... I'm sorry, Anne, no. No, 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 no. Princess Diaries, thank you very much. Devil Wears Prada, thank you very much. Doing the voiceover Hoodwink, thank you very much. Please, please don't go that road that says, you know, I need to broaden my range and play heroin-addicted teenagers. No, you don't.
Open season at number four.
Yet more of the kind of, yes, it's fine, it's put together professionally, but are our kids going to remember these movies, you know, given a few months? I mean, it's a constant problem for me, but I do want to see proper classic kids entertainment, and I don't see it. What I see is just more televisual cartoons, you know, CG cartoons, up there on the big screen. They're perfectly fine for the 80 minutes that they're on, and then they're gone. It's not enough.
The Departed at number three.
Partial return to form for Scorsese, not a full return to form, but as I've said every week, really worth it for Mark Wahlberg's fantastic performance.
We have Step Up at number two.
Which I didn't dislike half as much as most of the critics did. I mean, it's dirty dancing without any of the dirtiness. It's clean dancing, you know. It's kid from not very wrong side of the tracks, breaks into a dance studio, is sent to do community work in the dance studio, decides that actually he'd quite like to be a dancer. A couple of his friends are a little, you know, ambivalent about it, but then they all sort it out and they're, hey, let's do the show here. And it's perfectly fine. I read some lousy reviews for it last week. It's fine.
And the box office, number one this week, and a lot in the headlines as well. Saw 3, which apparently, I was listening to Drive a couple of days ago, had people running and screaming from the cinema and calling the ambulance service, and the ambulance service was saying, we're not sure that this is the best use of our time.
Okay, can I... Let's get this straight, okay? Firstly, Saw 3 isn't any good. Secondly, Saw 3 isn't scary. Saw 3 has a kind of a fairly high gross-out quotient in it, but not in a way which is done with any style or panache. It's just one of those, you know, relentless scenes of torture. We do one scene of torture, do another scene of torture, mechanical scene of torture, and blah, 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 blah. Now, whenever you have a horror movie that's sort of fairly substandard, the best thing that can possibly happen is that somebody can have an adverse reaction to it. And this then becomes the story around the movie. Now, Saw 3 was so poorly thought of by the distributors that they didn't want to show it to the critics. So we all had to go and pay to see it. And we all sat there and we watched it. And I saw it with, you know, a bunch of people who I know who are horror film fans. And we all went, well, hopefully that's it now. Hopefully that's all over. The story, however, that a couple of people had a bit of a queasy moment whilst watching, you know, one of the particular scenes of torture, has now become the story of Saw 3. If you're listening to this, it's, you know, this stuff is always hype. It's all, I mean, even as we all know, in the case of The Exorcist, which people were famously carried out, as anyone will tell you, the story became self-generating. As soon as someone tells you you're going to go and see this movie, you're going to have that kind of reaction to it. That's when it starts to happen. There is nothing in Saw 3 that should cause anyone to pass out. Walk out, perhaps. Fall asleep, perhaps. Make a couple of phone calls, because there's really nothing happening except for that guy being tortured on the funny machine on screen. Perhaps.
It did, but it also made me think, what were they expecting? I mean, if you've seen Saw 3, chances are you'll have seen Saw 1 and Saw 2. They know exactly where it is. It has a certificate, it has a poster, it has everything which says, if you don't like...
Scenes of torture.
Scenes of torture.
Which is what it is.
don't go and see it.
Yeah. Well, it, as I said, I think that what's happened is it's a very smart bit of marketing. I'm sorely unconvinced by the stories about people being carried out of it. I mean, it's entirely possible that a couple of people who happened to have been in screenings where Saul was showing took a bit of a funny turn. But after that, it just becomes a story. And the day that that story broke, I had everyone ringing me up saying, oh, you must come on to this programme and that programme to talk about this thing. Believe me, it's a non-story. It's an absolute non-story. There is nothing in Saw that deserves your attention in that way.
That's number one. So we'll look at the new releases in just a moment. Are you going to start with Borat?
Yes, I am.
Just as well, because the caffeine has arrived. Because I think it might be understated a little bit if it was a caffeine-free, decaffeinated Borat review. And in fact, Mick Dennis, who was on our sports panel in the first hour, when he arrived, said, actually, the only thing I want out of today's radio is to hear what Mark thinks about Borat.
That's it.
I gave him the... I gave him a version, which had been reported to me. But anyway, the proper and authenticated version in just a moment. It was a shame you missed Monday's programme. Mary Poppins was in.
I listened to it, yeah. I sat there drooling over the thought of Julie Andrews actually being in the studio.
And Jason Isaacs, who started his our conversation by explaining how many... He was a star of State Within last night on BBC. Fantastic opening to the series, and explaining how many times he's listened to the download, listened to the podcast. So, Jason, if you're listening to this in some far-flung place, hello from
but
your
the extraordinary
child.
Thing about it was, and what he said, and you know, because as I said, I was at school with Jason Isaacs, and when we were in class together, he was always the you know, incredibly funny, incredibly popular. In English classes, he would always have everybody rolling in the eyes. He's a very, very funny, very smart guy, and a very nice bloke who I, you know, would love to say was a close friend of mine when I was at school, but I wasn't cool enough, you know, to have any close friends at all.
No, because you were
a geek.
The geek in the corner.
But he said this thing. He said, I either mispronounced somebody's name or I had said something. And he said, you know, I know that I was on that movie and I know that that didn't happen. And I'm now sitting there thinking, what was the movie that I said this about at which I said the thing that was factually wrong that Jason would know about? And I was trying to think through all the movies of his that he's been in that I've read. I'm completely stumped. And here, because I've always been a stickler for detail, tell me what the specific thing was.
All right. So next time, Jason, because obviously you are listening to this is your personal podcast, send us an email, please, mail@bbc.co.uk, or just communicate in some way and explain what the problem is, and we'll try and sort that out. One quick,
yes.
See if you can guess the film from The Warning from JT in Dorking, contains scenes of mild purring.
Garfield?
Could be Arista Cat, but you know, anything.
Yeah, anything with a cat in.
And on the subject of Sting, Adam in Brighton, please tell Mark Sting does not get off a bike in Quadrophenia.
It's a scooter.
A crucial difference.
Sorry.
Pete in Nottingham, he wasn't bad in Stormy Monday. And Sean in Staffs, he was great in Dune. Anyway.
He was rubbish in Dune. The only scene in Dune in which Sting is any good at all is when he walks out of the steam shower wearing the stick-on plastic codpiece with wings on his, you know, on his whole fella. I mean, that is the only noticeable thing about that film, is Sting coming out of that steam shower. Other than that, he's absolute rubbish.
Amongst the new releases, you might have noticed the odd comment or the odd poster about Borat, starring Sacha Baron Cohen.
Sacha Baron Cohen, creator of Ali G.
Another former schoolmate of yours.
Well, not a school, somebody who went to the same school. He's a lot younger than me, so I never met the guy or anything. Because obviously, you know, when you're in school, you never speak to anyone in different years. That would be considered to be completely unacceptable. In the case of Ali G, started off as a small screen character who would do 5-minute skits, then proceeded to make one of the worst British comedy movies in living memory, Ali G Into House, which was absolutely toe-curlingly awful in every respect. Then Borat, the next character, Kazakhstan's second greatest journalist, again bumbling, doing sort of, you know, reality type, apparently staged interviews in which the interviewees don't realise that he's somebody taking the mic, now expanded to a full-length feature film in which Kazakhstan's reporter is sent to America. And when he gets to America, he sees Pamela Anderson on television, decides to travel from one side of America to the other in order to meet and bag Pamela Anderson en route, meeting and being rude to an assortment of people. Couple of questions. Firstly, it is always unclear as to exactly how staged the encounters are and how much the other people are in on the joke. In the case of the American feminist, there was a thing in the newspaper that they didn't know at the time. They were genuinely offended. Then later on, they realised they'd been hoodwinked. Then they got the joke in inverted commas, blah, 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 blah. At the very beginning of Borat, there is a sequence which a lot of people have referred to, which is really audaciously offensive in a way which is quite adventurous, which is a made-up ceremony called the Running of the Jew, which is like, you know, the Running of the Bull in Pamplona. And it's really ostentatiously in your face, outrageous anti-Semitism in a way that you can't believe anybody would actually do on screen. Now, as everyone knows, Sacha Baron Cohen is Jewish himself, and the point that he's making in this apparently is, you know, is about anti-Semitism. And there is a moment, a frisson there, when you think, blimey, this movie really is going to step over the edge, and it is going to do the thing that really daring, adventurous comedy can do, which is to step so far beyond the bounds of taboo that it, you know, it achieves a kind of purity of morality. Sadly, the beginning is never lived up to by the rest of the film. And there's a number of problems that I have with it. In the case of the American feminist thing, well, what's the point? I mean, what is the point of that? Talk about soft targets. I mean, there's a bunch of very reasonable American feminists who sit in a room with somebody who tells them that women have a brain the size of a squirrel, and half the audience laughs and bloody, bloody, blah. And then finally they get fed up and they walk out, and that's the end of the gag. What point are you making? The American feminists are stuffy? No. That Kazakh's primary reporter is sexist and misogynist? Well, that's kind of been established already. It's an awful lot of trouble for a very, very simple joke. And then what proceeds to happen is that the targets that get hit get softer and softer. There is a scene, a rodeo scene, in which Borat stands up and firstly praises America's war of terror, and war of terror, boom, boom, and the audience cheer and laugh. And then he says, I hope that Iraq gets bombed to the point that even the lizards are killed, and people are still cheering. Then he starts to sing the alleged Kazakh national anthem, which is all about potassium, to the sound of the Star Spangled Banner. And the crowd start to turn. They realize that they've been had, and they start to boo. Now, here's my question. I sat in a room, incidentally, that was packed for the screening of Borat, and everyone around me, and I mean everyone, was howling like hyenas. It was one of those really strange experiences when I actually thought, I may not be part of the same species as anyone in this room, because it is a very, very strange experience that everyone around me was just howling with laughter. My question about it is this. Laughing at stupid Southern American hicks is a very, very soft and a very easy thing to do. It's also, Kurt Vonnegut once said something about, he said that people tend to share ideas, not because they agree with the ideas, but because people like to agree with other people. And you can often put yourself in a circumstance, I mean, you can say something outrageous and the people around you can appear to agree with it for a while, because actually people just tend to agree with things that are being said. And there may be a political point in that, but it's not a particularly profound political point. And I'm not entirely happy with somebody, you know, a well-educated British person going over there and just laughing at stupid America. I think there is a rampant stream of anti-Americanism, which is at loose in the culture at the moment. And I'm really not entirely happy with it. Then there's the whole thing about the Pamela Anderson gag, that he falls in love with Pamela Anderson on television and he pursues Pamela Anderson until he finally gets to a book signing where he meets her and he attacks her with a bag. The joke is this is a Kazakh wedding thing. He puts the bag over her and she has to marry him. She seems to be genuinely shocked and startled. Now, I have no idea how set up the scene is, obviously, but the fact that it's in the movie, there's been some clearance in the end. But my discomfort is this. If it's completely set up, then Pamela Anderson is a much better actor than I ever had her down for, in which case I don't understand why the gag is about Pamela Anderson. If it's not, it's just another scene of, you know, a woman out of her depth. I mean, a rubbish, you know, terrible actress and whatever, all the rest of it, being bullied and jumped by, you know, by somebody in circumstances which I don't find entirely comfortable. Now, people would say the whole point of Borat is that it's meant to be uncomfortable. It's meant to make you feel difficult. It's meant to make you feel awkward. Well, fine, if the awkwardness and if the difficulty is to skewer people who really deserve to be skewered. Now, there are cases in which there's one point when he meets up with a bunch of frat kids who are really horrible and really unpleasant and really obnoxious and really misogynistic. And I kind of feel like, well, you know, hey, if they look ridiculous in public, they've kind of got it coming to them. But there's another scene in which he goes to visit a house in which he is taught etiquette by Americans. And he insults the guests and he insults their wives. And in the end, he produces at the door a black prostitute, and he kind of gets himself thrown out, and the implication is they're throwing him out because the woman's black, but that's actually not really what's happening. What's happening is that everything is broken down at that point, and you know it's not as simple as it looks. And the proof that it's not as simple as it looks is the amount of times the movie has to resort to simple gross out humor, to producing a bag of poo at the dinner table, to a nude wrestling scene in which, with, you know, men wrestling fat guys wrestling each other, prolonged, goes on for about 5 minutes, which all descends into Jackass territory. So question is, did it tell me anything I don't know about America? Not really. Did it occasionally insult people who have no need to be insulted? Yes. More important than all of that, in the midst of it all, was it side-splittingly funny? And the honest answer to this is, according to everyone else in that room with me, yes. According to me, not once did I laugh.
Jeff Marchant in... no idea where he is. Anyway, he sent an email.
Limbo.
On Borat, saw this last night. In 30-odd years, I've never laughed so much in a cinema, which by Mark's standard rating of whether a comedy is any good, it must be okay, I think. I've been thinking about romance explosions and other aspects of the film all day and chuckling. Means nothing to me because I haven't seen it, but will if you have. Phil, saw the Borat film last night. Cheap, crass, simple humour, but the audience seemed happy. It sounds as though in most screenings there'll be one or two people like you who don't like it. And most people will. This is, hang on, is it Andy says, watch Borat last night. Something interesting happened. The cinema crowd late last night were laughing heartily through the running of the Jew, amused by women's brains the size of squirrels, and Borat's encounter with the Washington Gay Pride Rally. But as soon as the rodeo guy said that all gays and Muslims should be killed, there was a sort of collective gasp. Borat is funny because we know he doesn't really mean it. Rodeo guy wasn't funny because that's what he really thinks.
No, there are guys, people in the film, who clearly, you know, are hold thoroughly reprehensible views. But there are also other people who are just, you know, somehow being caught up in it. The whole point about all this is it wouldn't matter so much if it did what it's, you know, what it says on the tin, which is that every single newspaper says, so funny, it'll burst half the blood vessels in your face, funniest film of the year, so funny, it should be at blah, 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 blah. I think there is a contempt involved in it. I think that there is a smugness involved in it. I think there is... there is something about the nature of the comedy which relies on a form of superiority with which I am not comfortable. Now, I do not doubt for one moment, let me be absolutely clear about this, I don't doubt for one moment there is a philosophy behind it, and I don't doubt for one moment that actually the intentions of a lot of it are completely sincere. I just don't actually have much interest in those intentions. It's a little bit, for me, like sitting around... you know, with a bunch of people, discussing, you know, oh, isn't such and such is so outrageous and such is so outrageous, thinking, yeah, you know what, I want to do the washing up now.
This is Five Live. Mark Kermode is here and makes appropriate movie reviews and the odd laugh about a sort
about
of football
things that he doesn't understand.
Stories. Jake in Reading snuck off work and saw the midday edition of Borat. Found it mildly amusing, but it's hard to really laugh when you're the only person in the cinema.
Yeah, although that is what I felt like, and I was in a packed cinema.
Paolo in London, what does Mark think of the idea that Borat plays on how much we are willing to accept, in this case racism, as long as a film works? Borat is a funny film. I've never sat in a cinema where people have laughed so much. That's great for the film, but also worried me in equal measure regarding its dubious politics. Maybe the film is interesting simply because of these mixed feelings that it produces. So it is the heart of your doubts about this film that actually people are laughing with it as well as at it.
Well, I do think that there are some people who will laugh with it. But then I think the way in which people react to those sort of things is not is actually unpoliceable. What I think is, I don't think for one minute that what the creators are doing in their use of racism, in their use of sexism, in their use of homophobia, I don't think they are in any way supporting those things. What they're trying to do is to skewer them. I think they're skewering them in a rather limp and not very well executed way. I don't doubt that some people, in the same way that some people saw Starship Troopers, the Paul Verhoeven movie, and just cheered a lot, not realizing that the goodies were the Nazis. That's not my problem. My problem is that if you take away the political, you know, incisiveness, which I don't think it has, you're left with a simple question: is it funny? For me, the answer to that question is no.
And for everyone else,
for a lot of people, the answer is clearly yes. But then a lot of people went to see Little Man. You know, what you can do? I'll tell you the other thing. Give it 3 weeks' time, and you are going to be so sick of people coming up to you and saying yes, Shamash, and you know, it is. It's catchphrase-tastic in a way that I guarantee you, by the time we get to Christmas, you're never, ever going to want to hear the name Borat again. I mean, I kind of got sick of it about 5 minutes into the film, which again is the other point, is it's a TV sketch extended to fill a film, and it's all the usual problems. That stuff doesn't translate.
Many, many emails on this topic. Ian in Teesside, you won't get this, Mark, but I'll read it anyway. Entered the room halfway through the Borat clip, and I thought I was listening to Jose Mourinho.
Really?
He's the Chelsea manager.
Okay.
And he's Portuguese.
Oh, I see. Fine. Very good.
Not Kazakhstani.
No.
Len, blimey, I saw Borat yesterday. I happen to agree with the good doctor. Yes, it's got some genuinely funny laugh-out-loud moments and subtle ones, like his next-door neighbour who has a girly iPod, but mostly it's toe-curlingly embarrassing, and at 89 minutes, it's not long enough to have these moments. A 10-minute movie would have been brilliant, mind. As I'm agreeing with the doctor, should I be on medication? Craig in Holloway,
This is like a counselling session for me, finding out that I'm not the only person who thinks this.
That's just the area of London, probably, rather than the prison, I think, as he's Craig, and that's a women's prison. Anyway, bravo, Mark, for your review of Borat. I, too, am deeply uncomfortable with this country's rampant anti-Americanism. To me, there's little difference between this and anti-Semitism, between this and colour prejudice. And, Mark, you've nailed it when you talk about the contempt and smugness. It's laughable and embarrassing, as if this country is perfect. And I'm not talking about Blair and Iraq here. We British are way, way short of perfect. Loads of stuff on this. So the lame confetti gets a good review, and the undoubtedly hilarious, if near the mark, Borat gets panned. A contrarian is Dr. Kermode, wanting to go against the grain of the other critics. Not a bad policy, but sometimes he gets caught out. How a man can rail against the death of narrative cinema, could tolerate the appallingly, totally devoid story of confetti is beyond me. He ought to be thoroughly ashamed of himself.
You see, the thing is, I know that some people think that I take a contrary stance on purpose. Believe me, it's not like I wake up in the morning and say, I wonder what everybody else thinks. I'll think the same thing. I sat there in the screening room with everyone else, and part of me really wanted to be part of this group of humanity that was reacting in this way. But part of me thought, I'm sorry, I can't lie to you. I mean, in fact, the smart money, judging by the reviews from everybody else, the smart money would be to say, you know what, I found it really funny, because actually, it's the idiot position to say, sorry, I'm the one who didn't get Borat, but I didn't, and there we go. And I don't think it's that. I don't think it's funny.
Okay,
and I do think the anti-Americanism thing is a problem. I think there is a rampant anti-Americanism.
And if you don't want to see Borat, there's plenty of other stuff. In fact, a bunch of stuff, as Mark would say, and we'll do that bunch of stuff between now and 4 o'clock.
66, amiable sort of British comedy about a young boy facing an increasingly downsized bar mitzvah, directed by Paul Weiland, and apparently based on his own autobiographical experience of his bar mitzvah, which was in 1968. Of course, everybody else other than me knew this. 1966, apparently, there was
a football match which was won by the team in red.
Yeah, okay, which would be us.
That's all you need to know. That's us. Well, if you're English, yes.
And that's, apparently, this everyone knows this from 66, this is the deal. And as it turns out, as the bar mitzvah celebrations get smaller and smaller and smaller, it also turns out that he's going to be on the same day as the World Cup. So, as the young bar mitzvah boy thinks, the first day in which he's going to be able to come out from the shadows and be somebody and be the centre of attention, in fact, is the one day in which the whole of the rest of the country goes completely bananas and he's left feeling miserable on his own because he's actually not that interested in football. Now, it's not a bad little film. It benefits greatly from a couple of good performances. I mean, it's got Eddie Marsden in it as his dad.
He was on the programme a couple of days ago.
See, I think Eddie Marsden is a really good actor. I've said this before. I think he's a really fine British character actor. He has that. He has a way of holding your attention. He has a way of making the very most of sometimes underwritten roles. And he does affectionate without being mawkish, without being sentimental. I think
he says he's the best friend. He's the out of focus best friend of the leading man.
I beg your pardon?
He's the out of focus best friend of the leading man, and he makes the leading man look beautiful.
Oh, I see. Is that how he describes himself?
That's how he described himself.
Well, that is Eddie Marsden being, you know, classically understated about his own time. I mean, he is a really fantastic actor. He was great in Gangster Number One. He's great in Career. He is somebody who you've seen him in loads and loads of different movies, and I think often people wouldn't even realise that he's the same guy because he does seem to physically transform himself, and he is a reason to go and see the film. The film itself is not a masterpiece. It says on the posters, from the makers of Bridget Jones and Love Actually and About a Boy, and it really doesn't bear much relation to those films. It's certainly nothing like as laugh out loud funny as they are, at least in their intentions anyway, and it doesn't have the kind of mainstream crossover appeal that those films do have. What it does have is it has its heart in the right place, and it's a gentle, affectionate memoir of a childhood that in the end struggles to tie up its football narrative metaphor quite as neatly as perhaps it would like to, but is saved by the performances. And, you know, it is nicely directed. It's clearly a personal project. And I would say really any film with Eddie Marsden in it is worth seeing. Also out this week, there's a French film which is getting rave reviews from everybody, called The Page Turner, which is this revenge thriller. And it's a story about, it was in the uncertain regard category at Cannes. There's a category at Cannes called Un Certain Regard, which is known affectionately as the uncertain regard, meaning that the people regard it are rather uncertain. They don't know what to do with these films. Well, The Page Turner
is. What category is that? I don't understand most categories.
Uncertain regard, right. Exactly. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, that's how the Cannes Film Festival works. There is in competition and there is uncertain regard. And this is the uncertain regard. And it's a story about a young girl. She goes for a piano exam. She fluffs the piano exam because one of the examiners in the middle of the exam takes a call and signs a piece of paper, puts her off, she fluffs the exam. Years later, she grows up. She gets a job working as a page turner for the examiner who caused her to fluff the exam. And because a page turner has great control over the person whose pages they are turning, she infiltrates their life and takes revenge. It's a cool, classy enough sub-Hitchcockian thriller that's received rave reviews from people. People saying, you know, really, really stylish, really classy. The interesting thing was that when I saw it, Dr. Williams, had been doing this paper on female revenge movies. And we'd spent the last 2 weeks in our house watching
this
things
is your
like,
wife.
Yeah, watching things like A Woman Scorned and Fatal Attraction and The Temp. And, you know, all these straight-to-video movies or sort of straightforward American movies in which exactly the same thing happens. Woman scorned at the beginning, then finds a way of working her way into the family. There's seduction, there's deception, and everyone's lives get destroyed. And the funny thing about the page turner is it may be in French, but it is that straight-to-video movie that's been out there for ages and ages and ages. It's just that it happens to be nicely filmed, and they're doing it in French. It's nothing like as original as people are giving it credit for. It is well done. It is well executed. It is a cool, stylish, straight-to-video American B-movie that happens to be given class by being given an Un Certain Regard category at the Cannes Film Festival and being delivered in French.
Oh, well, there's a gap, so shall I insert correspondence?
Yes, because you were leaning over for a thing.
Have we got any... we're just going to rattle through everything.
I'm going to do another one. I just skipped over one clip there because I wanted to get another one in before we go.
Okay, this is from James in Barnstable. On the subject of The Departed, numerous people have asked why it has an 18 certificate.
Oh, right.
The Kids in Mind website...
Well, it has everything.
Well, hang on. Which is kids-in-mind.com. Tells you it contains 226 F-words. It also scores on violence and sex, a useful site for various reasons. So it sounds as though that's the kind of website if you're wondering why a particular movie has a particular...
Is it Parents in Mind?
Kids in Mind.
Kids in Mind. There is also... There's a website... There's a Christian Watch website which has been open to much ridicule and actually much of it rightly so, which once declared the South Park movie to be the most evil movie ever made. But it does this regular thing about they will rate movies for not only what they have in them, but actually their moral tone. And it is terrific finding a very amoral film and then looking it up on the website. I'll try and remember the name.
Movie warning. Can you work it out from this?
Go ahead.
Do not look directly at the sun.
Do not look directly at the sun.
Spelled S-O-N.
Sans Soleil? Oh, the sun, S-O-N.
S-O-N. Think of your genre.
The Omen.
Correct.
Oh, very good. Thank you.
5 points.
Do not look directly at the sun. Yeah.
Mark in Reading. I saw Mark at Reading Railway Station on Thursday.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Past 8, walking out of Smith's on Platform 5, having bought a copy of the Radio Times. What on earth was Mark doing in Reading? There's nothing remotely cinematic.
Trying to get to Waterloo. Unfortunately, there was points failure at Branksome, which meant that no trains going through from Brockenhurst.
The answer not as interesting as the question.
No, but honest, as with the Borat review.
Chris M just wants to enter this into our taglines. It's obvious what he's referring to. Contains scenes of mild Meryl.
Well, it's any Meryl Streep movie.
Anything.
But I would say because it's mild, it would be Devil Wears Prada, wouldn't it?
What else do we have?
Little Children, an ambitious but deeply flawed piece from Todd Field, whose previous film was In the Bedroom, which is, I have to say, a much better film, adapted from a novel. And boy, do you know it's adapted from a novel, because it's one of those films that's got lots and lots of voiceover. I mean, the voiceover is sort of arch and alienated and very clearly, I know I'm doing a voiceover, but novel adaptations with lots and lots of voiceover can be difficult, and this is one of them. Cast of characters, all of whom are adults who, during the course of the movie, behave like children. Two central characters, Kate Winslet and Patrick Wilson. Patrick Wilson, incidentally, is a fantastic actor. I believe that he's been in some television programme, but I know him from Hard Candy, which is out on video at the moment, and he's great. Great date movie. Take your boyfriend to see Hard Candy and he will behave really well for the rest of the weekend. And they are both parents who are unhappy exercising their kids in a park. They meet up and inevitably they start having a relationship during which they become more childish.
And it all started just from that hug?
It did. It all began just that. Now, meanwhile, in the community, a sex offender has been re-released into the community and the parents are all anxious and up in arms about this. And there is a sort of convoluted and not entirely fulfilled subplot about the fact that the sex offender himself is really, under the surface, a child. He lives with his mother, like Norman Bates, and to her, he is still her boy. Now, the film takes a great big bite at a number of weighty themes, and it wrestles with some of them successfully and some of them unsuccessfully. in the midst of the sprawling mess that is the finished film, there are some very good performances. There are some very nicely observed moments. And there are some thought-provoking ideas. There is also a lot of hooey, a lot of hogwash, a lot of we need an editor to come in here and really trim this down massively. And it's one of those films in which the whole is less than the sum of the parts. Whilst you're watching it, you can individually admire things about it. But you have to, I think, even with the best will in the world, one could not claim that it hung together as a coherent movie. I do think Kate Winslet is a great actress. I think Patrick Wilson is a really, really good actor. And this and Hard Candy have, you know, led me to believe that he's a really fine talent, despite the fact the first time I ever saw him was in that absolutely lousy Phantom of the Opera adaptation, which was just trash. And yet here he is pulling out all the stops and doing really well. So it's an unsatisfying film with things in it that are worthy of a greater vehicle. And I really could have lived without the narration.
Well, I mean, we've done this before, but I do wonder whether there's ever, you know, as soon as a movie has a narrator in it,
yes,
I'm kind of wondering why? Is it something that they couldn't actually explain through normal cinematic tools?
There are examples of great narration, and I would say The Dream of the Mad Monkey, or just The Mad Monkey, or Twisted Obsession, as it's called in America, the Jeff Goldblum movie, based on the novel The Dream of the Mad Monkey, is one of the in which a voiceover did really well. This is one of the cases in which it's exactly as you say. You're saying that because you can't show it.
Ian from Ireland, how he describes himself: I never forgave Mark for telling us Wimbledon was funny. It wasn't. On this basis, I'm sure I'll laugh
like a drain at Borat.
Movie of the week? Anytime.
Scenes of a sexual nature, probably.
Is that really?
I mean, it's a slow week.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.